Radio Influence. Podcasting redefined.
He got him in the white trunks. He heard it.
That's beautiful. Oh, God. That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the top. Wow. And here comes a mention. And it's all over. It's nice. All over. First round knockout.
Big
is how Rich Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen, happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Welcome to the September 19th episode of the MMA Report podcast with Dale Calvon. I am Jason Floyd, and coming up here on this week's edition of the podcast, we're going to take a look back at what happened last weekend in Russia at the UFC show. We'll talk about the death of Kid Yamamoto, who died earlier this week at the age of 41. We'll answer listener questions. I'll have interviews with Patricky Pitbull, Rafael Lovato Jr., and Anthony Romero. I will talk about the Cody McKenzie situation that happened last weekend in Las Vegas when he was supposed to fight JD DiMaggio at the Tough Enough show. Plus, we'll preview this weekend's UFC and Bellator cards. Bellator on Friday, UFC on Saturday night. Plus, we'll have our buy-sell segment. As always, appreciate everyone that tunes in every week, downloads this episode of the podcast. If you're not subscribing to the podcast, do that on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Google Play. Plus, coming up later on in the show, going to tell you about a special offer we have for the MMA Report podcast listeners from our friends over at Vivid Seats. Daniel, how you doing, man?
Jason, I am doing fine. My question is to you. How do you feel now that you are 37 years old, Jason? How are you feeling, buddy?
Just like I felt 2 days ago when I was 36 years old. Outside of trying to get past this cold, my wife's a teacher who I basically call her the carrier. She teaches kindergarten. So any sickness that any of her students have pretty much come home. Yeah, trying to get over this damn thing.
Well, I hope you get over it. I hope you don't feel too old, Jason. I mean, you are roughly like 15 years older than me. But if it makes you feel any better. A guy just 2 years younger than you, Ryan Fitzpatrick, is doing his best Conor McGregor impression on the NFL. And as someone who works with the Buccaneers, I'm sure you're happy about that. So things will get better in your old golden years, Jason, that you're fastly approaching.
Fitz magic is alive and well, man. I sent you the picture that Bo Allen had tweeted, one of our defensive tackles, of Ryan wearing Deshaun Jackson's clothes to the press conference. And of course, that right when I saw, I was up in the booth, we were in our post game show, and I saw Ryan go up to the podium on the television. I said, "Oh, that is going to be a meme." Right when I saw it, I said, "Oh, that's going to be." And of course, it's still the talk of the entire NFL. Yeah, it's Daniel, I'll tell you, I've been doing Buccaneer football for 15 seasons now. I've never seen anything like this, you know. And as a lifelong Tampa resident, been a Buck fan all my life, and now working for the radio network, I tell you this, it's offense I've never seen with this team. And man, it's a fun brand of football to watch. So it's definitely fun. And I tell you, I kind of get to be like a normal American on Sunday because the Bucs play on Monday night. So Sunday I can sit on my couch and I can ingest all of the NFL that I want.
Are you excited for that opportunity, Jason? Or do you think you're going to find yourself halfway through the day just leaving the house? Because I feel like it's almost an opportunity for you to not like, look, Jason, you should be a normal human being. You should look at it as a day off from work, and you can go out to a park, you can go fishing, but you love sports so much. You look at the day off and you're like, oh yeah, now I can watch football all day.
I know I'm doing a birthday meal with my in-laws early on Sunday. I imagine most likely I'll probably be doing things around the house I've just been meaning to do. I'm looking forward to it. I'll probably watch a little bit of UFC Sao Paulo. Most likely will not watch most of that fight card live because gonna be going to the Tampa Bay Lightning game on Saturday night. Looking forward to this week. Of course, always looking forward to talk about what's going on in the world of mixed martial arts. And let's get kicked off talking about what happened last Saturday in Moscow, Russia. It was UFC Fight Night, Hunt versus Olenek. I had this fight card on the iPad as I was watching College Game Day, and then watching all the college football action.
or apparently what Florida State's trying to play. Apparently they call that football, but man, really tough to watch my Noles play this year. But did have it on the iPad, watch it. And when it comes to that main event, you know, really, obviously Olenek with another submission win, you know, showing where he is ranked as a, you know, top, you know, seven, six-ish heavyweight, somewhere in that range with that submission win over Mark Hunt. The thing that really sticks out to me about that fight, it was about, I would say, probably around the two-minute mark of that fight, Mark Hunt lands a right hand that probably would have dropped a majority of people, and Olenek didn't even flinch. He just took it, and that to me was almost like the turning point of the fight, because at that point, it was pretty much a Mark Hunt fight. I was sitting there, and I've got one eye on the fight, one eye on college football, and I see Hunt, you know, is, you know, winning the fight at that point. He lands that right hand, and Olenek's like, you know, act like he just tapped him. And I was like, that's the point to me. The fight changed, and where it almost I felt like there was a little bit of a facial reaction of Mark Hunt going, "Oh my God, he didn't fall."
Yeah, man, it was really a topsy-turvy first round. There was filled with momentum. It was like Mark Hunt gave him his best shot. But not only his best shot, man, was he chipping away at the legs of Alexei Olenek. And all those things must have hurt. The way he responded to the shot made it seem like it was not the biggest deal in the world. But you got to think deep down inside, was feeling the pain from his legs to a maybe seeing a few stars. But again, the story of this fight was Olenek hung with Mark Hunt on the feet and did not die. He was able to survive really the best effort from one of the best strikers in the heavyweight division. And he responded in kind by going back to his game and kind of showing why we call him the boa constrictor, taking down Mark Hunt, getting the submission. I think if you look at Alexei Olenek's career, this along with the Travis Brown victory are the career highlights, and this was just a nice performance out of Alexei Olenek. This wasn't your stereotypical dominant outing from a heavyweight making a statement. He went out there, he weathered the storm, and he kind of put himself in a position where you look at Alexei Olenek and you kind of get excited for his next fight, because this guy is capital T tough.
Yeah, it's going to be kind of interesting to see what they do with Olenek. When you look at that top 10 in the UFC heavyweight division, a lot of these guys are booked up right now. You know, I mean, Derek Lewis has got a fight booked. Curtis Blaydes has got Ngannou, Volkov. Overeem, I don't believe, has a fight booked off the top of my head. I know, by the way, speaking of Overeem, actually, he's now left Jackson Wink, I believe, training in Colorado. But you look at Olenek, he's got to be right there. Probably, I guess you'd put him right there at number eight right now, number eight challenger behind Junior Dos Santos. I mean, you almost maybe feel like, you know, and obviously timing plays a lot into this. You know, maybe is it the JDS Tuivasa winner potentially fights him? You know, who knows? I mean, I guess the question is what happens with Stipe Miocic. I mean, could Alexei Olenek find himself into that matchup? But, you know, Olenek puts himself in a great position. Another guy put himself in a great position is Jan Błachowicz. I mean, this guy, by the way, I don't think a lot of people may realize this. You realize he is the number four title challenger in the UFC rankings?
Well, now it makes his call out of the champion a little more realistic when you put that into perspective. But no, as consistent as Jan maybe has been in the UFC and as good as he is, you know, this is a guy who's won four in a row. I didn't think about him as a number four guy until you throw in the graphic. And it's kind of crazy, man. It shows you where the light heavyweight division is. But I don't think we're going to see Jan Błachowicz in a title picture in this next fight. But he's going to be in a big-time fight moving forward, maybe a fight with Gustafsson. And the idea of Jan contending for the light heavyweight title isn't really something I registered fully. I mean, his most impressive win is what he did most previously against Jimmy Manua, taking him out by decision. But watching this Nikodai Krylov fight, that second round in particular to me was just all Błachowicz. And, you know, Jan looks great, man. Him along with Alexei, these are two top fighters. If you're looking at it from the perspective of a business standpoint, you do have to admit that neither guy moves the needle at all. Neither guy would be identified. So, I mean, it's on the UFC to look into promoting them. But in their international markets, I mean, these two guys looked absolutely great in front of, what, 20,000 fans in Russia, Jason? I mean, I think that was the fifth largest crowd in UFC history, which is something that makes sense when it's in a country like Russia, but it's just still kind of weird when you look at maybe the quality of the fight card.
Yeah, I mean, also it kind of tells you about some of the buildings that the UFC goes into and how much they hold. I mean, something to note on Jan, he's won four in a row now, and three of those victories, he's won a fight night bonus. I mean, this is after he went through a stretch where he went 1-4, those losses, Pat Cummings, Alexander Gustafsson, Corey Anderson, Jerry Manoa. I mean, you have to note that the guy that's in front of him in the rankings, Lior Latifi, he holds a win over Lior Latifi back in 2014 in his UFC day. So he puts himself in a great position. Be interesting to see what they do here with Nikita Krylov, as of course this was his return to the UFC. Then we had a heavyweight matchup. Shamil Abdalrahimov gets a decision win over Andre Arlovsky. Arlovsky, man, you know, this is a guy that you just kind of wonder where he goes, you know, from here following this loss. You know, when you look at what he had done, entering this fight, he had lost a fight against Tatu Ivasa that was following back-to-back wins. But it'd be kind of interesting to see what the UFC does with him going forward.
Yeah, I mean, with Andre Arlovsky, if you're an MMA fan, if you have a heart, all you want to see is him go out there and not get brutally knocked out. Because he had a stretch there years ago where it was just knockout loss after knockout loss after knockout loss. You were concerned about the man's health. You know, a loss is a loss. This loss wasn't the worst thing in the world. My immediate thought wasn't Andre Arlovsky needs to retire. My immediate thought is I need to retire to sleep after watching this fight. I mean, this fight was rough, Jason. There wasn't too much concern about the health of either guy because there wasn't a whole lot there. I mean, to me, this was a kind of a close fight. And like the story was Shamil won these rounds via takedowns. And the inactivity was quite rough, especially third round was quite lame. And to be honest with you, my general takeaway was I'm not particularly interested in either guy. This fight itself was quite lackluster. And in terms of the future of Andre Arlovsky, I mean, it does seem like he's already kind of hit that late run peak that we saw, and only to get stifled by Stipe Miocic. So I wouldn't expect another run for Arlovsky. Maybe he'll be able to get a victory. But long term, I think we're going to see Andre have a few fights outside the UFC before calling it a career. I wouldn't be surprised if a promotion like PFL or Ryzen jumps on the name of Andre Arlovsky.
Or maybe even a Golden Boy MMA if they're doing shows past, you know, that show in November. I mean, I think that...
Are you pitching Andre Arlovsky Tim Sylvia for...
Oof. It'd probably have to be a super heavyweight fight.
Yeah,
I don't know if Tim Sylvia can make 265.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point.
Haven't seen pictures of him recently, but I know that Tim definitely is not living a diet.
That would be their fifth fight, by the way. I misspoke. They fought one time in one FC after their fights. So Tim Sylvia versus Arlovsky 5. I believe the record is 1-2 and 1 no contest. So Arlovsky has one win, Sylvia has two. I think you do the fifth fight, Arlovsky probably wins, and then you do the sixth fight, Jason. And I think the Golden Boy, I think that's how you become, you know, a mover and shaker in the world of mixed martial arts.
I mean, look, this main card for UFC Moscow, I mean, it may be one of the, you know, storylines that you look back on this, you know, maybe 6 months, a year from now, is that it'll be maybe one of the final UFC fights for three of the four guys that lost on the main card, Hunt, Arlovsky, and Thiago Alves. See what goes from there. But I mean, there was some, I guess probably one of the biggest storylines to come out of this card really has to do with Herb Dean and the stoppage, or lack of stoppage at the end of the second round, which, I mean, look, I think Herb Dean is the best referee in the business, but, I mean, by God, that was one of the worst non-stoppages I've ever seen.
Yeah, man, that was brutal. That was brutal. I mean, Herb Dean is awesome. Herb Dean is well-respected. I mean, when you're a referee and you're out there every time out, chances are you're going to make a mistake. But this was brutal. The way Dalloway was just turtling up, or really, you know, the name of the game is intelligently defending yourself. And Dalloway was not doing that. You know, forced for the bell to ring and for him to kind of be done on the stool, be done in between the rounds. And this was just a rough outing for Herb Dean. I mean, this was really bad. This was something where, you know, when you go to work and you mess up, you get a write-up. And I think this is kind of deserving of a write-up. I mean, I know there's no consequences to being a referee in MMA, or if there are some, and I'm sure there are some, it's not something that really affects the top tier guys, and probably won't affect Herb Dean. I don't think it should, but I will just say that unequivocally, that fight should have been stopped way earlier in the second round. Khalid Mirzayev should have won that fight. Should have been a finish. He did win that fight. But again, all that happened there was a guy in Dalloway who was clearly out, Jason, took way too many strikes after being out that likely affected his career.
Oh, yeah. It should have been stopped way before that. Also on the prelims, got to mention Mirbek Taisimov gets the decision win over Des Green. Didn't miss weight by 5 pounds. But after the fact, talking about if he can't obtain a visa, retirement could potentially be in his future. He's been on a nice little run here. And, obviously when it comes to visa situations, you're never going to get an on-the-record comment on, you know, why a certain fighter cannot get a visa. And, you know, there's a lot of factors that go into it. And, you know, it's one of these things, the fact that it's gone on this long and the UFC has not been able to get a visa for Mirbek Taisimov, it almost makes me think that it's probably unlikely it ever happens.
Yeah, man, it really is, because you would think it would have happened by now. And how many times have we seen it, whether it be fighters affected by Bellator or UFC, that their careers are taken primarily in whichever country they're in? And I have zero confidence that we'll see Taisimov ever fight in America again. And I think it's fine. It's unlikely he's going to be a part of the title picture. I think the UFC runs enough international cards that Taisimov can fight in them. And this was a fight where I wasn't even that impressed by Mirbek Taisimov. I mean, to me, he won it pretty much every round. But Des Green fought him close, man. I really thought so. I thought this was a nice performance out of Des Green against a guy who's really well-respected in Mirbek Taisimov. And it is sad, but, I mean, I can't think of a single time that we've seen a serious visa issue, be resolved after a couple of years. I can't think of one, Jason.
Ooh, I mean, I'm trying to think of any. I mean, obviously, the Ferdo Kasparov is a situation Bellator dealt with, look, when you're talking about coming to another country, it's, you know, they're going to look in various factors. So for whatever reason, the United States, there's something that they don't like about Mirbek Taisimov, whatever it is. We have no idea, what that may be. In terms of the rest of the fight card, one of the results that sticks out to me is Jordan Johnson going down to 185 pounds. Of course, you know, came in to the UFC as a 205-pound fighter, drops down to middleweight, gets a submission win in the second round. Is there any other results that, stick out to you about this card?
Yeah, I mean, you briefly mentioned that Thiago Alves probably on his outs to the UFC. I just wanted to point out that his opponent, Alexei Kunchenko, was a big-time prospect type of guy. Didn't really ace the test. The fight itself, that first round was rough. Third round, it was okay for him. It seemed like as the fight wore on, Kunchenko looked more impressive. So it wasn't a world beater performance. On that prelim card, I want to highlight two guys that lost that I thought did pretty solid: Jinsu Sun and Cajun Johnson. Johnson looked okay against Rustem Khabilov, kept things close, could have won a split decision. And Jinsu Sun took on Peter Yan, and despite missing weight, that's a negative. Jin was very entertaining to watch him fight, because as he was getting beat up, he would just smile, move forward, talk crap. I liked it. Another finish on the prelims I really liked was out of the light heavyweight, Magomed Ankalaev. This is a guy who got tapped by Paul Craig, I think, or in his last fight. It was like a fight where Ankalaev was winning it the entire time. And very, 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 very late in the fight, he got tapped out. So he came out against Martin Pragnio, got a head kick, knocked him out. That was phenomenal. And lastly, the opener, Mirab Devilashvili, a bantamweight, completely and totally dominated Tarion Ware, and he to me looks like a great fighter at 135. That was kind of the performance you were looking for him after quite a few rough outings for Merab Devilashvili.
Yeah, and I did see Tarion Ware, you know, did kind of, you know, he understands that most likely that's going to be his last fight in the UFC, and definitely not done, but did mention that kind of dealing with an injury situation. So that is UFC Moscow. Of course, we're going to preview UFC Sao Paulo come here later on in the podcast. But we had some sad news come out this week. Kei Yamamoto passed away at the age of 41. It wasn't that long ago that he publicly revealed that he had cancer. Apparently, this was something that was diagnosed as early as 2016. It was a stomach cancer and passed away where he was in Guam receiving treatment for this cancer. And, you know, I think for newer UFC fans, they'll probably think of kid's time in the UFC, which, you know, look, was not successful. But I mean, really, when you think about Kei Yamamoto and you think about in the early, you know, early 2000s, this was a guy that was, when you thought about smaller weight fighters, I mean, you know, Uriah Faber is a name that constantly comes up. But if you go back to 2003, 2004, 2005, 2006, in that era, man, Kei Yamamoto was one of the best 135-pound fighters.
Yeah, well, you mentioned a name like Uriah Faber. Like, that's who I wanted to see Kei Yamamoto fight back in the day. I mean, whenever he made his jump to the UFC for Yamamoto, it was already way – he was just a different fighter. You know, after suffering a couple losses to I mean, really, after his first loss since, like, his incredible run, after his loss to Joe Warren at Dream 9, really things he was just a completely different fighter. It is interesting, though. We were always wanting that dream fight out of Kei Yamamoto. And at his UFC debut at UFC 126, it was not a fight that really stuck out, but he ended up fighting Demetrius Johnson, which, with the benefit of hindsight, is a quote-unquote dream fight, I would say. Ended up losing that, losing three consecutive UFC fights in a no contest. So when I think of Kei Yamamoto, it is about he was, you know, it doesn't seem like guys get the hype they do now when it was always like, this is the best lightweight or this is the best light heavyweight outside the UFC. You know, like you are, I don't know. It just felt like back in 2007, 2006, 2005, there was a list, you know, your Fedors, guys like that, who got a lot of hype for maybe being even the best guy in their particular weight class. Now it seems just, I don't know. It just doesn't seem like people are making those cases for guys anymore. Maybe it's because a lot of the guys that are dominating in non-UFC companies already have a history in the promotion. But Yamamoto was definitely one of those guys, a guy who was probably a little ahead of his time in that, like, had he came around now, all of those fights would have been at 135 or 125. This guy was really, really small, and there were several fights in his career and in his run, his knockout, you know, run, where he was fighting guys who would fight at lightweight, and he was fighting at lightweight, but guys who were much bigger than him, and he would knock them out. So Yamamoto, during his run from like 2004 to 2007, it was absolutely amazing. Knockout win after knockout win. He had a 4-second win over Kazuyuki Miyata that really sticks out to me. And not only was he really good inside the ring, but also this was a fighter with a whole lot of charisma for the Japanese audience. And he was also a part of like a pretty famous family in the world of amateur wrestling. So in Japan, he was just a major, major star. And he certainly fought like it. So it's a sad loss, but this is a guy who it was a real major figure in the MMA world from like 2004 to 2007.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the one name that sticks out to you on his victories throughout his career has to be Bibiana Fernandez.
Yeah, yeah, and that was finally an opportunity for him later in his run to fight guys who are like his size, you know, and he was able to get that win over Fernandez. But again, just a list of some of the names he beat in his run. And again, these names don't necessarily look as impressive as they do when it happened. But I mean, wins over Hoyler Gracie, Cal Uno, Genki Sudo, Miyata. Again, these are guys who generally are a bit bigger, guys who generally fight at 155. And Yamamoto would go in there and he would knock them out. And, you know, it's a shame that he wasn't able to kind of hold on to his prime as he entered the UFC. But he's a guy, Jason, I'll just always remember as a fighter who, when he was in his prime, that's a guy I wanted to see take on the best guys in America. And he never had the opportunity to do so in his prime.
Yeah, thoughts and prayers go out to his family, but we want to move on and get into some listener questions that I did receive on social media. Up first, we're going to go to @JoeDaddy85, asking a little bit about Ryan Fitzpatrick. He goes, does Fitz even know that he was Conor McGregor for one day? And if you go onto the Dan Patrick show, I want to say on Tuesday, Fitz shared a story where when we were playing up in Minnesota last year, where he got recognized, as someone thought he was walking around the mall up there, and someone thought he was Conor McGregor.
And so that's where the inspiration came for his post-game outfit?
I don't think that was the inspiration for it. I mean, look, it's a loose locker room. It was
It was Conor McGregor. That was Conor McGregor cosplay. All right. The second you sent me that picture with the sunglasses, no shirt, the medallion, man, the only person I could think of was Conor.
Yeah, I mean, the funniest part about that press conference was it was right at the end. Deshaun is over on the side shirtless, and Ryan goes, hey, guys, two more questions. I got to give Deshaun's clothes back. And Rock Riley, who is a sports talk show host in this town, been on TV for a long time here, he goes, Ryan, is there anything you're wearing that is yours? He goes, my chest hair.
I love it. I absolutely love it. It's amazing, man. Look, I'm not a Buccaneers fan. I'm a Houston Texans fan. But, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick was a player on our team. And every year the NFL gives you some insane stories that make absolutely no sense, you know. And one of those stories is Ryan Fitzpatrick is the best fantasy quarterback after 2 weeks. And it's crazy, you know. But I'm actually kind of happy and thrilled for Ryan Fitzpatrick. It does seem like this is the smartest quarterback in the league because he went to Harvard. That thing is starting to play out.
We've got another Harvard player, Cameron Braid. He went there too. I mean, we got some smart dudes on the team. Up next, this comes from @TakedownTed. He goes, why hasn't John Jones been tested in a year when the rightful champ pay-per-view Dan Cormier has been tested 30 times? Thanks, Jason. Love the show. Fan since day one. You know, John Jones has been tested 3 times in 2018. Dan Cormier has been tested 11 times in 2018. John Jones was tested recently. You know, and by the way, you can go to the UFC USADA website and you can see the exact amount of times a fighter has been tested. I think, you know, and USADA really hasn't said much about the John Jones situation. And can we please stop this John Jones fighting at UFC 230 in November? Please stop this, folks. I'm telling you, that's not going to happen. The likelihood ultimately is he's getting 2 years. So the earliest I think you have the potential seeing John Jones is August of 2019. But I think that the reason you haven't seen Jones test a lot, I think it's more due to the ongoing case that Jones has with USADA.
And when do you think that's going to get resolved, Jason?
Damn, if I knew the answer to that question, I'd be a genius, Daniel. I mean, that's a question that I tell you I probably get at least once a week on social media.
Because the dude is literally like probably one of the best fighters of all time. And think about how long ago it seems we were talking about John Jones and the California deal. And I thought the thought process was within a short period of time, you saw it would have their own ruling. Because that's, the California deal isn't not dependent on what USADA rules.
No, it's not. I mean, look, it's, you know, one thing that I think people necessarily haven't really talked about it is whenever, you know, the one thing is whenever John Jones gets suspended by USADA and that suspension, you know, comes to a conclusion, he's still going to have to go in front of the California Commission to get a license back, you know, because of the ruling they came down there with. But I would be absolutely floored if John Jones gets less than 2 years. I think that 2 years, I think, is the best case for John Jones. You know, I mean, look, 4 years is on the table. I don't think he gets 4 years, but it's on the table. But I mean, it just, it, you know, I just think there's some people out there that I have some that have this false hopes that magically John Jones is going to be off suspension any day now, and I would be shocked if that happens.
Yeah, me too. It's a high profile case. 2 years makes the most sense given his history and the idea that he's going to fight at UFC 230. You know, I would love to see it, maybe, but certainly won't happen. But it's kind of ironic that, like, by the time he finds out he has a 2-year suspension retroactively, it's only going to be like 6 months. You know, it's going to be a short period of time based on the fact that no decision has been rendered. It just makes you wonder what's going on in the process that is causing it to be so delayed.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I said, I think it's a minimum 2-year suspension. That's just my personal thought. Our final question comes from @JoeDaddy85. He says, what do you think of yellow cards for every foul in MMA bout? Foul as much as you want, just money comes out of your pocket. Look, I'd love to see yellow cards in MMA. The reality is it's not going to happen. There's certain things we see in MMA that, you know, you wish there was more penalizing for. You know, to me, the one that really sticks out is grabbing the cage to stop a takedown. I mean, how many, you know, times do we see that? I mean, hell, how many times do we see that in just in a given, you know, fight card? I mean, and it's an absolute rarity that you see a referee take a point. Because that, you know, really that's the only way you're going to stop fouls from happening is start taking points away from these guys.
Yeah, I think points are important. You know, we got to figure out a solution here, because it does seem like the cage grabbing fouls are the most irritating, because it does seem like they are the ones that you consciously are making that decision. You know, an eye poke, a groin shot, there is some sense of it is a mistake, honest mistake, but that still plays a role in the fight. You know, when you get hit in the gonads, it still hurts. So maybe you should get penalized right away with the yellow card, you know. You know, I think I would attack the points, not necessarily the money out of the pocket, just because, again, it's like, if you're telling me fouls do not affect the fight, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to kick the dude in the balls like 4 times, and I'm going to go for my guillotine choke. You know, it's going to be kind of a pay cut, but once I piece together that 7-fight win streak, I'll be main eventing pay-per-views, Jason. So, that would be that's how I would game the system. So that maybe is maybe the fault in the suggestion. But hey, man, I wouldn't mind yellow cards with the referee. That would be kind of cool. But maybe that could just signify a point being deducted.
Yeah, I mean, it's always like, I always wonder, like, is the fair thing if, you know, if you get kicked in the nuts that, you know, the payback should be, you should be allowed one free kick to your opponent to really even it up.
Oh, dude, that would be hilarious. That would be hilarious. I know Josh Barnett may have done that one time. I don't know. God, Josh Barnett was fighting somebody. It must have been – I need to look up the name, because I don't want to say, like, you know, Taylor Tooley, because it wasn't Taylor Tooley. It was – let me look. He was fighting Mighty Mo and Dream, I think. And basically what happened is Josh Barnett kicked him a couple times in the nuts. And then after the fight, he just let Mighty Mo kick him in the balls. That's what I remember. So, yeah, Josh Barnett. You know, he's a trendsetter, doing what you've already asked for.
Yeah, it's always something I kind of think of when we have a fight come up there. By the way, something we should mention here, you know, we always like to mention Tony Lopez. Tony Lopez coming off another win, fought at Rage in the Cage, OKC 61, less than 2 weeks ago. And, yeah, he fights in 2 weeks again.
He had a bit of a... He had a bit of a stall there, you know, when we covered his Alaska fight, and he did the bare knuckles deal, and that kind of kept him off. But it's good to see him fight in 2 weeks, Jason. It looks like Tony Lopez is returning to form. What's his record now? What is his record standing at this point?
He is 61-28.
Buy or sell, Tony Lopez gets 100 wins in his career.
Ooh, man, that's a good one. I'll sell it, man. I mean, he's 44 years old. I mean, even if he went undefeated, he might be able to get 40 fights in 4 years.
I can see it. Or four fights in 40 years. I could also see him fight for 40 years.
Man, yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. But at the beginning of the podcast, I did mention that we have a new supporter of the podcast, and that is Vivid Seats. Fellas, if you are looking to go out and get tickets for your favorite team, you want to check out our friends over at Vivid Seats. I used the product this week. Went on the Vivid Seats app. You know, wanted to go to the Tampa Bay Lightning game on Saturday. Found the tickets I want. Very easy. Found the tickets. Boom. All good. So you want to check out our friends over at Vivid Seats.
Look, man, you weren't the only one that used Vivid Seats. I did too. You know what I love, Jason? Professional wrestling. And this past weekend, the WWE came down to the Rio Grande Valley to Edinburgh, Texas. It was the first ever WWE event in the Burt Ogden Arena. And I used Vivid Seats to get my tickets. And I tell you what, I'm off this Sunday. I might use them again because I think that my Houston Texans need me to support them this Sunday. They're 0-2 thus far. They take on the New York Giants. And I think I'm going to go to Vivid Seats. I'm going to get my tickets. I'm going to be in the stadium. I'm going to make sure they win. Why am I going to go with Vivid Seats, Jason? Because they offer great prices, and it's just an easy purchasing experience. And here is the cool thing, Jason. With the podcast code INFLUENCE, our listeners can receive 10% off their first purchase with Vivid Seats.
And all you got to do is go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. Enter that promo code INFLUENCE, INFLUENCE, to receive 10% off your first purchase with Vivid Seats. This offer is good for new customers of Vivid Seats. All Vivid Seats orders are confirmed and backed by a 100% guarantee. Of course, once again, when you buy your tickets, put in that code INFLUENCE, so you can receive 10% off your first purchase with Vivid Seats. And once again, all Vivid Seats confirmed orders are backed by 100% guarantee. Now it is time to get into the interview portion of this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. Up first, you're going to hear my conversation with Patricky Pipple, who's going to be fighting on Friday night at Bellator 205, taking on Roger Huerta. Then you're going to hear my conversation with Rafael Lovato Jr., who's going to be taking on John Salter on that Bellator 205 card on Friday night. Of course, big matchup between those two guys. Of course, that fight was supposed to take place earlier on this year. Did not take place due to John Salter not being cleared for a fight. And then in the final interview, you're going to hear my conversation with Anthony Romero. We had him on the podcast a couple weeks ago. Young kid, he improved to 3-0 this past weekend at the King of the Cage event up in upstate New York. So I talked to him about his victory and also what is next for him. So here's my conversation with Patricky Pitbull, Rafael Lovato Jr., and Anthony Romero. Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man that's going to be stepping back inside the Bellator cage on Friday night, September the 21st. It is Patricky Pitbull. Can we take it on Roger Huerta? Patricky, as always, I appreciate the time. Of course, this was an opponent change. Initially, supposed to take on Gochi Yamauchi. Were you disappointed when Gochi pulled out of this fight?
Yes, a little bit, because he's a tough guy. He's a good guy, very good jiu-jitsu. He's Brazilian, too. And he showed very high-level kick, showed very high-level jiu-jitsu. I want to pass me with guys like him. Stand up, that's it. But change my opponent, and it doesn't matter who is the next.
And of course, you're one of the top title challengers in the lightweight division. Is your view of this of simply a win here, no questions, your next fight should be for the title?
Yes, I'm sure. Is my time. Is my opportunity for this. I don't see one guy that do this. Fight for the belt. I'm ready. I beat all the guys in my class. So this is my time. That's it.
And I had a chance to speak to Brent Primus recently, and he mentioned he's trying to get that Chandler rematch, and for whatever reason, still hasn't been signed. Maybe at some point it will. But I said, if the Chandler fight rematch doesn't happen, what's next for you? And your name came up. When you hear that news, is it kind of bring a big smile to your face that the champion realizes that you're the next guy in line?
vamos falar um pouco dele. Antes de Prêmio ser campeão, ele já tinha me desafiado e eu também gostaria de ter lutado com ele. O porquê? Porque eu nunca lutei com ele. Ele é um cara invicto, é um cara que estava querendo se testar e eu estava querendo bater no cara invicto. Então, seria uma ótima luta para os dois. É, infelizmente, aconteceu dele se lesionar e está tentando fechar uma luta. Pô, esse Chandler está querendo fazer um show de ser um cara difícil, de não querer lutar pelo título e tal. Eu estou pronto para isso. Eu estou pronto para lutar pelo título qualquer hora. O Bellator tem que parar um pouco de esperar tudo sobre Chandler. Ele não é quem está fazendo grandes lutas na organização. A audiência dele está lá embaixo. Os números estão comprovados. Eu estou pronto. E eu sou um cara que faz, que dá mais audiência. Um dos caras que dá mais audiência junto com o meu irmão dentro do Bellator.
Even before Primoz was a champion, we almost fought. He challenged me and I wanted to fight him because he was undefeated and a guy that I hadn't fought in the weight class before. And I would love to take away someone's invisibility. So I was thinking that that all had to go. But he got injured and then there were some things that happened and I never got to fight. And now, of course, this is a fight, especially with him having the belt. We had some back and forth, and I want to fight him. And if Chandler, all Chandler wants to do is put that image that he's above everyone, just talk crap on social media and not fight anyone, and make tough to get. So I say just put him aside and let me fight for the title. I beat all the guys in my class that I had to beat. And I'm ready to fight for the title. I deserve to fight for the title. Chandler isn't this hot shot that he's making himself out to be, and even some part of the media. His ratings are down. I believe he had the worst numbers in Paramount history, like way below everyone. And me and my brother have been proven as some Bellator top draws. Our ratings are bigger than Chandler's. So I don't know why Bellator makes it the Chandler show and everything being around him. But it's time to stop with that and give some recognition to other fighters of the company as well.
When I mentioned on social media that you were going to be on the show, I had a listener ask me that they wanted to know your thoughts on Michael Chandler making fun of your porn stash. And also they want to know, what's your favorite technique to drill inside the training room?
Aquilo que eu fiz do meu bigode não foi... Ele era um idiota, meu irmão. Ele era um idiota. Ele só quer aparecer. Ele não tem o que falar, não responde as perguntas. E as críticas que a gente faz para ele. Ele se contradiz o tempo todo no Twitter com a gente. Ali foi meio que uma homenagem ao meu pai quando era militar. Ele não sabe o que está falando. É a mesma coisa de eu criticar ele de alguma forma e ofender a família dele. E foi uma coisa que eu fiz de brincadeira, eu lembrei do meu pai no momento e tentei homenagear. Já pensou se ele faz alguma coisa para homenagear a família dele e eu vou criticar a família dele?
That was something that I my father, he's a retired police officer and back in the days he had a mustache. So I did it a little bit different, but just out of fun, and my friends started doing that as well, ended up letting it for the fight. And Chandler is an idiot. You talk crap because that's the way he is. He's a comeback. All the time we talk to him on Twitter, he gets into contradictions, and he gets lost during the argument. So he has nothing good to say. He has to speak on something here and there. It's stupid. I don't really mind about him, but it's so stupid. I did that out of fun, in homage to my father. And imagine if I was talking something that he did as a joke or an homage for some family members of his. He wouldn't like, but I couldn't care less what Chandler does or doesn't. And it's just something I did out of good fun. So what is his preferido?
Meu drill preferido é a combinação de kickbox com wrestling.
And my favorite drills to do during tax are kickboxing combinations mixing up with wrestling.
And of course, we've been talking for a couple minutes now. We haven't even mentioned who you're fighting, and that's Roger Huerta. Of course, steps up on short notice. Roger returning to Bellator earlier this year. When you get the phone call that Gaethje's out and Roger is the opponent, do you remember your initial thoughts on the matchup?
É uma luta que eu sempre quis. Quando eu entrei no Bellator, ele ainda era lutador do Bellator. Então, é um cara que eu sempre olhei para lutar e sempre olhei para me testar também. E eu acho que ele não entrou de última hora, não. Na verdade, a luta foi anunciada 2 semanas depois de ter anunciado a luta contra o brasileiro, Luiz. Então, eu acho que ele teve um bastante tempo. Eu já entrei em luta até pelo cinturão, faltando 30 dias. Então, isso não é desculpa.
Roger is a guy that I always wanted to fight. When I signed with Bellator, he was still on the roster, and that he was someone that I looked up to, like a guy I would like to challenge myself against. So it's a fight I always wanted to do, and I'm happy to do it now. I don't think he's taking this fight on short notice because Koichi pulled out 2 weeks after the fight was offered, and he stepped up, so he only had 2 weeks less than me to prepare, and there's still like 6 or 7 weeks of plenty of time trying to do it. When I had my title shots, Bellator gave it to me with 30 days to prepare, so he had more than enough time to get better. I don't think it's going to be any faster in the fight, and I'm just looking forward to do it.
Final thing, Patricky, as always, I really appreciate the time. For the fans that are going to tune in on Friday night, September 21st, to watch you fight on the Paramount Network, what should the fans expect to see in your fight against Roger Huerta?
I think it's gonna find the most the contra o brasileiro, porque o brasileiro, eu acho que o brasileiro ia procurar a luta de chão, mas eu tenho certeza que eu vou nocautear essa luta.
I think it's going to be a more fun fight than if I was fighting the Brazilian, because I believe he would be trying to take me down and the ref is going to try to stand with me. So I think it's going to be great for the fans, and I'm going to knock me out.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man that's going to be taking on John Salter here at Bellator 205 on Friday night, September the 21st. It's Rafael Lovato Jr. Rafael, as always, man, I appreciate the time. One of the things in checking out your Instagram page, one of your last posts that you had up there, you talked about the last day of road work and you know, thanking your coaching for keeping you healthy and getting you in the best shape of your life. And, of course, that is a line that we hear all the time in the fight game. You know, why would you say you are in the best shape of your life heading into this one?
I mean, a couple of reasons. I mean, I'm always evolving, always getting better, always trying to improve my routine, my lifestyle, be as professional as I possibly can. Every camp, you know, you figure out little things, you know, as far as like when to plug in a recovery session, you know, or like, just learning and getting better with how to schedule everything just right and, you know, get that whole big puzzle, get all the pieces fitting together perfectly. And, you know, for every camp, I'm not just trying to make improvements on the you know, the technical or the physical, but also just the lifestyle aspects of it, you know, and just a daily routine and improving on that and where I choose to spend my time and put my energy across the board. And so that is definitely a reason why I feel like I'm in the best shape of my life right now, just because I'm always getting better at everything. And for this specific fight, I started camp a little earlier This was a 10-week camp instead of what I normally do is like an 8-week camp. And I feel like that really, that extra 2 weeks really just did something special with my conditioning, my body recovery, being able to spread things out a little bit. And I'm happy and confident. And I think, you know, that's another reason too, when life is good and you're feeling great, you just want to say, man, this basically when you're, you know, life is good, you're happy, you're confident, like, yeah, this is the best day of my life. I'm in the best shape of my life. This is going to be the best fight of my life. So, you know, that's how I feel.
You know, I have to imagine for you, obviously we've talked about how you go do your camp in Brazil, also here in the United States, but here in the United States, running a gym, scheduling and balance has got to be something that you have to juggle on a day in, day out basis. I mean, is there sometimes for you that do you have to understand that you need to be selfish in terms of doing what you need to do to get you ready for a fight?
Yes, for sure. You know, and that's what kind of like what I was touching on earlier, just how to schedule everything, how to prioritize, understand what you need, you know, on a day-to-day basis to be at your best. And, you know, I don't want to go teach class or be, you know, in my business and not be at my best for my business or for my students as well. And so I've learned that there are certain days and nights where it's better that I, you know, I'm not there and I'm resting. So that way when I am there the next day, I can give 100%, and, you know, be at my best for them, just like I need to be at my best in my training. And I'm just so thankful and fortunate that I do have, just an amazing staff, amazing group of students that, are really supportive of me chasing after my goals and dreams. And I just, you know, hope that they are inspired by the work that I'm doing. And I believe that they are because I see how hard they work, even when I'm not there and when I have to travel for camp. And so it's just a beautiful thing, but, I think it's the best way, man. Honestly, like, you know, yes, I have to understand when to be selfish, but at the same time, I wouldn't want to be like just a fighter in the sense that all I did was fight and I didn't have a school or I didn't have, you know, another thing. And for me, that helps you stay focused and helps you, you know, just live this life of more fulfillment, you know what I mean? Understanding why am I doing this? And I have more people that are giving me great energy and I want to be there for them the same way they're there for me. And so I love teaching. I love running my school. I love my students. And for me, I think it's, you know, it keeps me even more focused and makes me do my best even more.
You mentioned about this being a 10-week camp, but I have to imagine it kind of feels a little longer than that since you were supposed to fight John back earlier this year. Unfortunately, medical reasons, he has to pull out the fight late notice. I know that week you're grateful for Gerald Harris to step up and take the fight so you could still get a fight and get a payday. But do you feel like you've just been training for John Salter for like 6 months?
Yes, I do. It's funny you say it like that because, you know, on the other interviews, I've basically saying the same thing. I've been training for him all year. He's been on my mind all year. You know, like, I'm ready to do this. You know, he's a great challenge, and I'm not going to be any more prepared than what I am now. So let's go have some fun.
Did maybe it open up your eyes to other things about John's game that, you know, maybe when you were initially preparing for this fight that you didn't necessarily notice or but now you notice a lot more things about him because you've been watching him for so many months now?
I wouldn't say necessarily about him, like me noticing things, extra things about him. You know, it was maybe more learning and understanding more things about me and my game and what I'm capable of and just feeling my continued improvement and evolution. You know, I'm a completely different and better fighter now going into this fight, you know, next week than what I was back in April. So, you know, I'm better prepared for this fight, not necessarily because I know more of John, but because I know more of me and what I'm able to do. So, yeah, the extra time was, you know, it wasn't ideal. I was ready to fight him then, but it was destiny. Got to, you know, everything worked out the way it's supposed to, and I still got to perform in Chicago, and now we get to be the co-main event. Musashi and Warriors the next week. I think it lines everything up perfectly. You know, after this, we go for the belt.
That was going to be my next question, because I don't think Bellator's officially come out and called this a number one contender fight, but I think clearly there's no question that the two of you are the next, you know, the winner of this fight is going to be next for a title matchup. You know, is your plan here, get the win here, and then is your plan to be in San Jose the next week and kind of do a little scouting of, you know, who your next challenge could be?
No, actually, I won't. Well, you know, I'm going to be watching, but I won't be there. I'm going to be actually in Dallas that weekend coaching my students at a jiu-jitsu tournament. So I'll be going back to doing what I, you know, what I do. My guys are getting ready for a big jiu-jitsu tournament, you know, so then it'll be my turn to be there for them. But I'm definitely going to be watching, and, you know, right now I'm just thinking about Salter and getting my hands raised. But, you know, all goes well, get a beautiful victory, and fight for that title next. That's my dream.
Would there be, I mean, in an ideal world, would you love to get a quick turnaround and have, you know, potentially have that title fight maybe before the end of this year? Or do you think the likelihood is when that would happen would be early on 2019?
Well, I think it depends on how our fights go. You know, if, you know, any of us end up in a war and end up super banged up or whatever, or I don't know. For me, it's not a big deal, like on the date, you know what I mean? As long as that would be next, I would do it as quickly or as long as whatever it takes. and even if they said, you know, hey, you need to fight someone else, I mean, you know, that wouldn't be ideal. Obviously I'm ready to get up there as quickly as possible. But, you know, whenever I do get there, I don't want there to be any question. You know, oh, he's only had this many fights, or, you know, blah, 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 blah. You know, he's not ready for it. Like, I want to, you know, solidify myself that I deserved it. I think everyone else out there does that, you know, whoever wins between Salter and I, you know, Salter has already been deserving of a title shot himself. I mean, you got to give it to one of us. You got to. So that's what I'm hoping happens.
I think for some of the MMA fans out there, they're almost kind of hoping that you and John, this fight gets to the ground and see how his submission goes up against you. Do you think that maybe he's going to try to challenge you down there, or is the expectation of, I don't think he's going to the ground with me. I'm pretty much expecting he's going to stand up with me.
I think we're going to do it all. I mean, we're going to start standing, right? We don't start on the ground. So we're going to stand. And at some point, we're going to end up clinched up for sure. And if I feel like I can take him down, I'm going to take him down. He feels like he can take me down, he's going to take me down. That's what we do. We put people on their backs. You know, we get to the ground, we finish him. And, you know, maybe he doesn't. If he doesn't feel like he could submit me, he's still going to try to hit me. He's going to score points. He's going to look to finish in other ways, and I'm going to do the same. So I'm fully expecting for us to touch the ground at least once at some point, you know, but we're also going to, you know, punch and kick each other and everything else in between. So, you know, people always ask me, what's your strategy and da 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 da. And, you know, I try not to put any one specific thing in my mind too much and just plan on being better everywhere. You know, that's the strategy, hit and not get hit.
And, of course, we all look forward to seeing this fight, the co-main event of Bellator, come up on Friday night, September the 21st. Rafael, I appreciate the time, and good luck in the fight, man.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Back on the program is a man who got a rear naked choke submission victory this past Saturday night up in upstate New York at the King of the Cage event, Anthony Romero. Anthony, appreciate you coming back on the show, man. We can see the people that are seeing this video are seeing the scar that you have there over your left eye. But, you know, talk about the fight, you know, as how you thought it would go down, how it would go down, and how do you assess your own performance?
I always say that I'm hard on myself. but I'm happy. We had the interview before the fight, and I was talking about how I had two decision wins, and I'm not too happy about that. I really want to finish fights, and it finally came. Yeah, it finally happened. So, yeah, I'm happy about that.
Yeah, I was looking at your amateur record, and this you only had one submission as an amateur arm triangle choke, correct?
Yeah, one submission and one TKO. Yeah.
So, I mean, the rear naked choke, was it something that, you know, leading up to this fight that you kind of felt like, I think I'm going to get on his back and a rear naked choke is going to be there? It was just one of those things that it just naturally, you know, happened, it opened up, and you went for it.
Yeah, I was actually working on it at Parabellum in Oakville with my jiu-jitsu coach, Rory McDonald, and Linda Whitlock. They're really pushing this rear naked choke, being a little bit mean with it, like pushing up on the nose and getting under the chin. So it ended up working out.
And obviously it's, you know, 3-0. I mean, obviously you're off to a tremendous start here. I mean, I'm sure you've already thought about what is next for you. I mean, you know, obviously you want to, you know, take some time, you know, recover from the fight and not get in there too quickly. But, you know, is there a timeline that you and your coaches have on terms of what is next?
Yeah, the next fight for King of the Cage is supposed to be November 10th at the Allegheny Casino in Salamanca, New York. And I was talking to the promoters. I hope they're listening because they told me this. But working on a title fight for the lightweight title for King of the Cage. So I'm hoping we get that on paper and I can sign my name on there and we'll get that going.
Man, that's awesome. Fourth pro fight, you're already into a title matchup. So, you know, how you know, I mean, we're less than a month out from that fight. You know, how do you, you know, did you just take a couple of days off? Or are you already back in the gym? Or maybe later on this week is when you get back in there and really start the preparations?
Yeah, well, like I'm already in shape. I'm taking this week off. I got to heal this cut up, so no sparring for a little bit. But I sparred lots for this camp. And this guy, the champ, he's about the same height, same style, so it's nothing new.
Is it tough for you to sit back and not, you know, get right back into the gym? Is it hard for you to turn off that switch?
It is. I'm happy to have like my parents. I live with my parents, so they always reminding me, oh, you need to take some rest, eat some food, and kind of relax for a little bit, and my coaches as well are telling me that. So I trust them, and I'm listening to them, and I know that I'll be ready when the time comes. If he does accept the fight, I'm hoping he does. If not, then I'll find someone else to fight. But that's my goal, is to win that title before 2019.
They always talk about, as a fighter, as time goes on, you learn and how to do things better as you go, you know, from your amateur days until where you're at now. I mean, has it just been a learning process of how to take care of your body, you know, to make sure that you're maximizing performance, whether it's in the training room or on fight night?
Yeah. I find throughout my fights, I've been learning how my body reacts to certain training sessions, how I feel after the hard wrestling practices or hard sparring rounds, and kind of keeping it easy the next day or maybe the day before leading up to the sparring day to make sure I'm actually ready and not overtrained for that day and not performing well. So yeah, my coaches have been really helping me a lot, especially getting this finish. So I thank them.
And going back to the fight against Elijah Harris, was there anything he did in the fight that surprised you that you just weren't expecting?
I was surprised he stood up for me for as much as he did. The fight will come out, I think, like 6 weeks from the day or something like that. So I haven't even seen it. So, but I'm surprised how much he stood up with me. And I've expected him to be a little bit stronger from watching his other fights. He took everyone down pretty much. But I'm happy that I've been working on my wrestling with Chris Brickett at Brock University, and it paid off. So I never got taken down. I took him down all three rounds and dominated on top, and I got the finish. So that's a bonus. Yeah.
Outside of getting the submission, what would you say? I mean, if that's the thing that you're happiest about in terms of the fight, what would be number two?
It's a good question. Yeah, I got the finish, and then I'm happy that I pushed myself to get the finish. Like that's kind of my main focus about this fight is, or before the fight, was to get the finish. And I think, like, push myself, like, mentally, because I was winning all three rounds and I could have just stayed on his back and held on. I think there was like 20 seconds left, but I kind of would have been disappointed getting my third decision in a row. So I think I'm happy that I was able to push myself through that.
I know the King of the Cage put out there 4 minutes and 40 seconds was the official end of the fight. You know, going and just kind of based on what you're saying there, did you maybe feel going into this fight and that maybe in your two previous fights that you didn't push yourself enough in say the third round to try to get the finish?
I believe so. I find that I rely so much on my wrestling that I can dominate anyone I'm in there with. Like I can just stay on top and just ground and pound and ride it out till the fight ends. But that's not gonna get me noticed. That's not what people want. For some people it's boring. But yeah, so I got to keep doing that. Hopefully I can get a little bit earlier next time, and maybe not get cut. So
I mean, it's a balancing act, though. I mean, you want to be fun. You want to be exciting. You want to be a fire that, you know, promotions want inside their cage. Fans want to, you know, go out of their way to watch fight. But you also got to put yourself in the best positions to win. You know, if that means, hey, you know what, my wrestling is so, you know, is much greater than what he can do, I got to do that. I mean, is it just simply a balancing act for you?
I believe so. Like I said at the beginning, that I'm very hard on myself. I'm striving for that perfect victory, and I think that's what's making me better every fight. And I'm hoping that one day that it'll happen.
In terms of kind of, you know, you talk about being hard on yourself. Has there ever been a point that you maybe felt that you've just been too critical of yourself and it's not allowed you to realize the good things you're accomplishing?
I think it's good for me. Like I have people around me telling me, oh, you did a good job. And I also have people around me saying that I have things to improve on, which are my coaches, and which is why I have them in my corner, because they're going to help me get better. But I think it's good that I'm like that, because I could be like, oh, I finished the fight and just be happy with my performance. And then the next fight, I'd be full of myself and then maybe not win. Right. So I think it's good. And it keeps my ego down and keeps me humble. And that's why I'm doing well so far. So
you mentioned about, you know, taking this week to recover before you get back in there. So what do you do this week? I mean, what do you do just to kind of, you know, kind of tone down and not really, you know, worry about the fight game?
Kind of pretty much doing work around the house, helping my parents out with stuff that I couldn't do during my camp. And then kind of spending time with family. Right now I'm actually off to the track for horse racing. So my sponsor has a horse there that he's having to race, and that'll be pretty fun. Maybe bet a little bit of money, who knows, make some more money. And yeah, so just kind of enjoying life for this week, and then back to work next week.
Make a little extra money. Maybe the horse goes out there, gets you in, and makes it a little better. But, you know, you mentioned October 10th is when you're looking to get back in there. November 10th.
Yeah.
If that fight doesn't take place, I mean, is the hope to still be on that card against somebody else, or maybe it's at a later date and try to get another fight in before the calendar year ends?
Yeah. My goal is to have at least to be 4-0 before 2019. So if I don't get the title fight, I'll fight someone else, right? The main goal is to get to the UFC and get to the top there. So if I can get as many wins as possible, it looks good on my record, and I'll get to the big show. But this title is a small goal of mine, and I want to get that before I get my big goal.
Now, have you nudged the King of the Cage people to say, you know, we need to come to Canada for a fight in the future? I mean, have you started that nudging?
For sure. I'm going to start mentioning that. I'm kind of a pain in the butt right now, kind of bugging them about the title for now. But yeah, maybe I can get the title and then bring the show to Canada. Yeah.
That's what you got to do, though. You got to constantly be on them.
Yeah. So.
But that's awesome. But congratulations on the victory. Really appreciate you coming back on the show to recap the win. Of course, as always, let everyone know they can follow you on social media on all the various platforms.
Yeah, you can follow me on Instagram at genius_MMA. And that's my main platform. You can follow me on Anthony Romero on Facebook. And thank you to all my sponsors, all the support, family support, my parents, King in a Cage for having me on your show again. And thank you for having me on your show. It really means a lot.
And Daniel, there was my conversations with Patrycki Pitbull, Rafael Lovato Jr., and Anthony Romero. Appreciate all those fires coming on this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. Of course, Patrycki and Rafael are both going to be a part of that Bellator card coming up on Friday night. Bellator 205, of course, going to be headlined by AJ McKee taking on John Teixeira. Big matchup there at 145 pounds. Really looking forward to that matchup. Of course, this fight card going to be taking place up in Boise, Idaho. Coming up this week on theamereport.com, we'll have a video interview that I did with Vince Morales. He is a cousin of Ricky Simon. He is on the preliminary card taking on Justin Hugo. Of course, you can watch that on Bellator.com. Of course, also, if you're a cord cutter and you have DAZN, this event will be streamed on DAZN along with being on the Paramount Network. I haven't signed up for DAZN yet, Daniel. I will tell you, I did get some tweets from some Canadian followers I have that did not speak very highly of DAZN. And the next 2 weeks are going to be very big for DAZN. I am going to sign up for DAZN this week because I want to see that Anthony Joshua fight on Saturday afternoon. But tell you, big 2 weeks for DAZN here in the United States.
Absolutely a big 2 weeks. I mean, honestly, I'm probably not going to sign up until the Musashi McDonald fight just because I need something to activate me. And I'm content just watching this on the Paramount Network. And big 2 weeks for DAZN. But yeah, again, all I really care about is the MMA, you know. The one boxing fight I care about per year is the yearly meeting between GGG and Canelo Alvarez. So I got that bookmarked. Hey, maybe that'll be on DAZN next year. In terms of this card, I'm actually kind of excited for Bellator 205. Again, this isn't something that's going to drive people to put down their debit cards, their credit cards, their TGI Friday rewards cards and purchase DAZN. You know, no one's going to buy it for AJ McKee and John McCappa or John Teixeira. And I am still looking forward to it because when I look at this card, there is the intriguing matchup between Patrycki Pitbull and Roger Huerta. It's a fight that I'm not even sure should be licensed because I just feel like Patrycki is just above and beyond where Roger is at this point in his career. I just feel uncomfortable about that one because Patrycki is also a very damaging striker. I think he's going to win. But if Huerta does win, we're talking about one hell of an upset. And then the top two fights really interest me because they're matchups between guys who we kind of know how good John McCapp is. We kind of know how good John Salter is. They're taking on the prospects, the guys who are really trying to validate themselves and go from prospects to contenders. And that's exactly what Rafael Lovato Jr. can do. That's exactly what AJ McKee can do. Simply put, I think the winner between Lovato and John Salter, they're looking at probably a middleweight title shot. AJ McKee, if he beats John McCappa, this guy is going to put himself in a phenomenal position in the featherweight division. I think he will do so, but I think John Salter is going to stop Rafael Lovato.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I agree with you. I like this fight card as well. I think there's a couple matchups on the preliminary card that really interest me. Jared Trice, see how he continues to develop. Steve Mowry making his UFC debut. Of course, if you've been watching Titan FC, that's where Steve has been fighting. Adam Borix, of course, we had on the podcast last week, another name to pay attention to. And I mentioned about Vince Morales. Those are some of the fighters that pay attention to me. When I look at this main card, I'm really interested in this main event. I don't think it's a main event that's just going to get people giddy, but to me, this is about really, really seeing where AJ McKee is. I mean, he's had a lot of fights, but you look at that win over Justin Lawrence, that was a big step up in competition. I mean, from his previous couple fights, I mean, Dom Mixada, that's a great win, but now this is a bigger step up in competition, taking on John Teixeira. So this is the matchup that really has me interested in me. And you're absolutely right. Salter Lovato Jr., clearly number one contender fight. You just heard my conversation with Rafael Lovato where we kind of joked about, he's basically been preparing for this fight for, basically 9 months since the beginning of the year. I totally agree with you. I look at that Patrycki were to fight. And to me, that just, that screams highlight reel knockout for Patrycki Pitbull.
Yeah, it just doesn't, it screams fun in the moment and then really sad thinking about what transpired. But again, you know, every time Roger Huerta's in the cage, presents the opportunity for an unbelievable story. Again, Lovato very well could win that fight. He's a guy who's constantly impressed, a guy really good, built his way up through Bellator. I just feel like John Salter's really good. But again, it's been a while, It has not been often that when John Salter's been in the Bellator cage, he's taken on someone at the level of Rafael Lovato, and he's going to do so. That's going to be a real test for Salter as well as Lovato. But yeah, I mean, the Roger Huerta Patrycki Pitbull fight just seems like a bad idea, Jason.
Yeah, I mean, and of course, you know, we should note that it initially was supposed to be Gochi Yamauchi against Patrycki. You heard me bring that up in my conversation with Patrycki. Pretty much Gochi, you know, pulled out of this fight about 2 weeks after this fight was booked due to injury. You know, Huerta steps up. I mean, obviously a huge opportunity for Roger Huerta. And, you know, the lightweight division, it's just, we really don't know what's going on. You know, I had an interview with Brent Primus on the AmeriPort.com recently. You know, basically he is saying, you know, waiting for Chandler to sign the contract, and literally about me putting that interview out, about 5 minutes later, Michael Chandler responds to me on social media, basically essentially saying there has been no contract. You know, I don't know what he's talking about. You know, clearly that's the fight to make. Now, of course, if Bellator signs Eddie Alvarez, I think if you're Bellator, you got to book Chandler Alvarez. I don't see why you just wouldn't book that fight. So to me, Patrycki Pitbull is in a really good situation here that, you know, it's to me, if you're Patrycki Pitbull, you're almost rooting for Eddie Alvarez to sign with Bellator. And then that puts you right potentially into a title fight if you get a win here. Also, you got a women's flyweight matchup on this fight card. As of we're doing this podcast here on Wednesday morning, September the 19th, the betting odds have not come out for this. So I imagine we're going to see some heavy favorites in Patrycki. I expect, you know, I would imagine AJ McKee will be a small favorite. Salter Lovato, I think, is going to be probably around a pick'em type fight.
Yeah, I think both those odds are going to be incredibly close. And again, I just feel as though with McKee, I think it's going to be a back and forth fight in which he outpoints him. And with Salter, I think it's going to be a similar situation. So Bellator, you know, it really did a nice job with these top two fights. And sometimes you get those mismatches, but that's absolutely not the case for Bellator 205.
I mean, here's the question. If AJ McKee has a convincing win over Chan Cher, does he get the winner of Patricio and Emmanuel Sanchez?
That's a very interesting question, because the thing with the featherweight division, Jason, is I'm not even sure there's a long line of guys ahead of AJ McKee to begin with. So let's say AJ McKee goes out there, gets the victory. I mean, who else would you even look at in the featherweight division to potentially challenge for the title above a guy in AJ McKee, who we have seen grown before our eyes, is a fresh contender and has plenty of momentum?
I mean, if Pat Curran could ever stay healthy enough, you look at him. Obviously, you know, Daniel Vichel is someone to consider there. But, you know, I mean, obviously, I think, you know, Daniel, I mean, even though he's had close fights with Patricio, you know, you probably he has to get, you know, another win or two to get back into out contention. But you got to think, if it's a convincing win, you got to think AJ's got to be, you know, right there in line. I mean, and in the co-main event, this is the thing. If you are Lovato and Salter, you got to be rooting for Musasi to win that fight, right? Because if Rory wins, the middleweight division's tied up for the next 9 months.
Oh, yeah. It's the same way any guy in the UFC, it's the same way the featherweights are feeling when Conor jumped up to 155. Clearly for McDonald, it's all about getting the title, and it's not probably about defending it immediately. I think he has intentions of being a two-division champion and defending it in both weight classes, but after that, it's welterweight tournament time. So undoubtedly, they're going to be wearing their Gegard Mousasi fighter kits during Bellator 206.
Man, I can't. I'm super pumped for Bellator 206.
Oh yeah, dude, that fight between Musasi and McDonald has been on our radar for such a long period of time. And it's not just that. The rest of the card is pretty interesting. But again, Musasi and McDonald, Bellator providing a great fight. I'm just kind of shocked to see if Rory is a decently sized underdog. I'm looking at best fight odds. And according to Five Dimes, he's plus 220, which is a little high, I thought.
I'll tell you, and by the way, speaking of Bellator 206, scheduled to be on next week's podcast, Douglas Lima and Aaron Pico. I love that Aaron Pico Leandro Higo fight. To me, like, you know, if you want to talk about your hipster type, you know, fight you're really looking forward to on that fight card, it is Pico Higo. I mean, that is a fight that you just look at, and Higo is, I expect him to be kind of undersized in that fight a little bit against Aaron, but man, and I did see, and I'm going to talk to Aaron about this, that Freddie Roach is going to be in his corner for this one.
Yeah, that's weird, but it's cool. It shows you the cachet he has in the boxing world. And when we're doing a list of like top 10 fights we were looking forward to, Pico Higo was on there for me, just because I think the world of Aaron Pico and the fight against Leandro Higo represents a massive step up for competition. It's a moment where if he does win, he's immediately in the title picture. He's immediately a relevant, top guy in Bellator. Higo's a phenomenal test, a great talent, but Aaron Pico is a special talent. And that's why, like you, I'm absolutely bookmarking that fight. I can't wait for it.
Yeah, really looking forward to Bellator 206. Of course, we'll get into more of Bellator 206 next week here on the podcast. But, of course, coming up on Saturday night, we have got UFC Fight Night 137, a.k.a. UFC Fight Night Sao Paulo. Of course, it was supposed to be headlined by Thiago Alves taking on Jimmy Manoa. Jimmy Manoa gets to Brazil and ultimately gets hurt. And he's out of this fight, and your boy Eric Anders steps up on 6 days' notice to take this matchup, going up to 205 pounds to take on Thiago Alves. It should be noted that this fight card, the main card, will start on FS1 at 10:30 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday night, 7:30 out on the West Coast. Your prelims will be on FS2. That'll start 8:30 p.m. Eastern time, 5:30 p.m. Pacific. And your early prelims on UFC Fight Pass will start at 6:30 p.m. Eastern time, 3:30 out on the West Coast. When I look at, some interesting, matchups I find on this card, one of those matchups has to Hannah Burrell taking on the UFC newcomer and Andrew Ewell, who, of course, are the CES champion. That definitely is a fight. Also, you got Christos Yagos returning to the UFC. He's going to take on Charles Oliveira. That's going to be your feature prelim on FS2. Also, a guy that we saw in Bellator for a long time, Augustus Sakai. He makes his official UFC debut. He takes on Chase Gorman. Also, you talk about you were talking about Patricio Pitbull and Roger Huerta, how that could be, a highlight reel knockout, but also can make you feel sad. Is Sergio Moraes versus Ben Saunders that fight for UFC?
That's a good question. I don't think so. Look, that fight's going to be awesome for sure. The thing with Sergio Moraes is he is lethal, and he's likely going to win that fight. But at least we've seen Ben Saunders get multiple wins in the UFC over the past couple of years. That's the difference, but it could be very sad, absolutely.
In terms of this main event, I don't even know. I mean, this is an interesting one because obviously this is 285 pounders fighting at 205. It's going to be interesting to me to see if Eric Anders engages in a kickboxing fight with Thiago Santos, or does he just try to get this fight to the ground and use his submissions?
I think if he doesn't, he's going to be in a world of hurt. Again, this isn't a whole lot of preparation. I mean, he could go out there and try and make things dirty early on the feet. That's probably the best way for him to have success. We've seen the progression out of Eric Anders, but this isn't, with so little fight time, this isn't about progression from fight to fight. This is about using what you already have to get the victory. And for Anders, I just think testing your stand-up against Thiago Santos is a recipe for disaster. He's got to go out there. He's got to game the system. He's got to get rounds. He's got to win them with his wrestling. And he's got to inflict high-impact damage from the top position. So I'm not sure what he's going to do, but if I was going to advise him, it would absolutely be to utilize his background in wrestling. I think this is an awesome opportunity for Eric Anders, But because I do still think a lot of the fight will play out in the feed, Jason, I'm handicapping this fight. I think Thiago Santos is the favorite, and I think he's my pick to win this one, Jason. I mean, what do you expect out of Eric Anders?
You know, it's interesting. I kind of like Eric Anders in his matchup, and the reason I like him is just I believe he's a more complete mixed martial artist. I mean, look, Thiago Santos, clearly dynamic power in those hands, but also I do wonder, you know, if this fight does hit the 16-minute mark, what is that power going to be like for Thiago Santos? And, of course, the other side of this is, you know, Eric Anders taking this fight on such short notice. I don't know if I feel comfortable in picking Eric Anders, but that is my pick in this one. Alex Oliveira in the main event, always a fun fighter to watch. Rogério Nogueira returning for the first time in nearly 2 years. Trinaldo Dunham, a little bit of name value there on the FS2 prelims. Overall, you know, it's an okay UFC fight night card.
Yeah, I think Charles Oliveira, Christos Giagos, that's the number two fight I'm looking forward to out of the entire card. No, not really looking forward to Talis Leitez, Hector Lombard. That one sticks out, buried on the Fight Pass card between two guys who run up pretty high tabs when it comes to payday, and two guys who we've seen in prominent forms. Other fights I'm interested in, Jason, would be Ronda Marcos against Marina Rodriguez, as well as Livia Souza making her UFC debut against Alex Chambers. I think this is the fight for Souza, setting her up to look impressive. The former Invicta strawweight champion, I think she's going to win in an impressive fashion against Alex Chambers.
By the way, speaking of Invicta, I got to find the email that I got, and this was from a listener, and I've not heard the audio, but Beck Rawlings was on Frank Mir's podcast. I'm trying to find this email. Basically, Beck Rawlings basically didn't really have a lot of great things to say about Invicta. Basically, this is from Phone Booth Fighting, and the email I got from Juno the First, who emails me all the time with various things he hears on podcasts. He wrote, 2+2 gets in cage and fight for a UFC name in the past or the opponent. It sounds like unfair pay. UFC is keeping Invicta alive, but fighters are starving. Would Bellator pay Beck Rawlings more? WSOF would pay $500 on low card fighters. Was worse, of course, wondering if Invicta pay unknown fighters $500 too. I think, you know, when it comes to fighter pay, it's also got to be, it's how much is a promotion making? And maybe that tells you a little bit about the financials of Invicta. But, for Beck Rawlings, I think she's found a little niche there in bare knuckle boxing. Personally, I'm not going to go out of my way to watch bare knuckle boxing. I would think, that Bellator would maybe try to bring in, if the price was right for them, to add her to the 125-pound division. I would think that would be someone they would be interested in. But, with Invicta, I think that probably maybe tells you a little bit more about kind of where the financial, situation is. I mean, look, at the end of the day, everyone's got to make money. The fighters got to make money, but the promotion's got to make money too. And it's, and really it tells you a lot of what the MMA industry is outside the UFC, and it's tough. It's a tough industry to succeed in.
Yeah, it is. I mean, look, I don't necessarily think Invicta was withholding a massive amount of money from their fighters. You mentioned the economics. If you have a company maybe with a relationship at the UFC, you would think, even if your shows aren't, big time product, big time, they're not producing a lot of money, you would think maybe it's in the UFC's best interest to do solid paydays to give fighters momentum or motivation to compete in Invicta and to continue pursuing the sport. Because maybe you're not making that money on the short term if you're maybe helping a promotion put on fight cards and incentivize fighters to fight. But if you create a system where you do decent paydays or livable paydays, you can fight and live, pay your bills or pay some of your bills, that will probably motivate more people to pursue mixed martial arts, and that creates a better opportunity to create stars and higher level fighters. So I think there's a long-term game there, and if you're the UFC, that's something you could look at. But again, those paydays are just putrid, but they maybe make sense with maybe the amount of money that is brought in. So it's a sad deal all around. And again, this is a sport, as you mentioned, that is not really accommodating to those trying to get their break.
Yeah, it's a tough lifestyle until you can pitch or get that you know decent payday from a UFC or Bellator. But Daniel, let's get into our buy sell segment. Of course, we're going to hit it on five MMA topics, and of course, we're going to either buy or sell. All right, Daniel, we mentioned Chuck Liddell, Tito Ortiz, who they had that press conference last week where Tito said Las Vegas, California, which, of course, went a little bit viral. But let's start here. Chuck Liddell versus Tito Ortiz, Golden Boy MMA pay-per-view, does at least 100,000 buys.
Man, I could be wrong, Jason, but I'm selling the hell out of this. I really am. I don't think so. I don't think Liddell, I don't think Ortiz, I don't think their names mean too much nowadays other than a couple web articles for the day. Don't think people are willing to buy that. I think people are already spending their money on too many different things. And if you're going to be a new player on the market, you've got to provide something better than Liddell versus Ortiz. I'm sure he'll get some buys. Don't think he'll get 100,000. Yeah, man, this sucks. I'm not looking forward to it, and I'm selling it.
I would love to buy this. I would love to sit there and say, yes, they're going to get at least 100,000 buys, but I just can't see it because the reason I would love to buy this is if it can do 100,000 buys, it's great for the MMA industry and it's great for fighters. You know, and obviously I think you're probably going to see is that Oscar De La Hoya is going to bring more of that boxing model to fighters than what the MMA model has been for years. So to me, I would love to buy this, but yeah, I can't see it happening. It's Thanksgiving weekend. You know, look, will I watch it? I would love to sit here and say no, but I know it's going to pique my interest. I know it is.
Yeah.
Cause it's kind of like, it's like this, it's a curiosity of what could you see?
Yeah, you know? Well, it's nostalgia too. You know, these are guys we've watched time and again, and to see one more time, we're looking forward to it somewhat, even if we don't admit it. I mean, we talk about it all the time. Everyone talks about this fight, begrudgingly, sure, but that kind of is an indicator that there will be plenty of interest come fight time. I don't think this reaches out to the casual audience. I think it's only the hardcore audience that chastise it or are cynical about it, like us. Will end up being the ones to actually purchase it. Don't even know if it will extend past that layer, though.
Did you see the poster for this fight?
No, I didn't. How would you describe it? I'm going to look it up.
I think it's just weird the way they look in this poster. That's about the only way I can describe it.
This looks so weird.
Yeah, I know.
Well, specifically Chuck Liddell's eyes. Looks like he just woke up or just took a fart.
Tito? Like, it's like the way they look at Tito's left eye. It's like, did they Photoshop a black eye into it?
And also, like, here's the problem here. They did not spend much time posing these fighters. Because, like, Liddell, his body's, like, at an angle. And then, like, Ortiz is just, like, a horizontal where he just looks so, like, skinnier than Liddell. This also vaguely looks like an Ultimate Fighter cover.
You're right.
Yeah, this looks weird, man. This looks weird. I wonder how much Photoshop was done on this picture.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure there was a lot of it. But you know, look, we'll see how much interest there is there. Next up. The UFC announced last week on UFC Tonight that BJ Penn is returning at UFC 232 against Ryan Hall. Buy, sell, BJ Penn beats Ryan Hall at UFC 232.
You know what? If there's a matchup that I will feel fine with for BJ Penn, it is Ryan Hall. I don't expect Ryan Hall to go out there and utilize his Muay Thai clinch to put away BJ Penn. This dude's a grappler. So this is almost like a metamorphosis fight with MMA rules. But I sell the idea of BJ Penn winning. It has been quite a while since we've seen Ryan Hall fight. But just the fact that he isn't BJ Penn makes me think he's probably going to win.
Finally, the UFC got the right matchup for BJ Penn. Finally.
You're buying this.
I'll buy it. Yeah, I'll buy it. Hey, look, if BJ's going to win a fight, this may be the fight he's going to win.
That's true. That is true.
I mean, look, this isn't, hey, we're putting you against Yair Rodriguez, which we both knew. There was no he had no chance in that fight.
Absolutely. This is a fine matchup for BJ Penn. This is one where we don't feel guilty about previewing it.
Exactly. Next up, we were talking about Thiago Santos versus Eric Anders. And buy or sell, 205 pounds is where Santos and Anders should fight in their next fight.
You know, look, this is going to be probably the easiest weight cut either guy will ever have in their career. But just looking at the frames of these guys, if there's one guy who I think could fight at 205, it would probably be Eric Anders. But I would still sell this. But, you know, maybe one of these two guys will fall in love with the weight class after having an easy cut. How about you? Where do you stand?
I think it's better for Thiago Santos at 205 based on his, but to me, I think Eric Anders is a 185 pounder. I mean, I just think that's where he's a better fit at, but Thiago has talked about basically this is kind of for him, this was more of a kind of a trial to see if he wanted to stay at 205, which, I mean, look, there's a big difference between 205 and 185 pounds, so we'll see what happens there.
Well, keep in mind this. We mentioned it to start the show. Ilir Latifi is the number 3 ranked light heavyweight. Jan Blachowicz is the number 4 ranked contender. Maybe you should stay at 205, even if it's not the best physical fit.
I mean, look, how much have we talked about that with Chris Weidman? I mean, the road to a title fight for Chris Weidman at 205 is much easier than 185.
Yep, 100%.
Next up, another subject related to this weekend's UFC event. This will be Henner Burrell's last UFC fight.
I believe I am buying this. I mean, to me, this buy or sell is, do you think Henner Burrell is going to win his fight? And I don't think so. I think there'll be way too many losses in a row for the former champion. How about you?
Oof, man, I sell it. I think he sticks in the UFC for at least another one. But, I mean, man, it has been a rough road for Henner Burrell. You look at since that win against Uriah Faber on February 1st, 2014, he has only won 2 fights. Mitch Gagnon and Philippe Nover, losses to TJ Dillashaw 2 times, Jeremy Stephens, Aljamain Sterling, and Brian Kelleher. Man, it's been a rough road for Henner Burrell, but yeah, I think he gets at least one more fight in the UFC. That's just my final buy sell is related to a fight that got announced this week in bare knuckle boxing. Will we watch Johnny Hendricks fight Brandon Ward?
You know what? Maybe. I mean, probably not, but I'm going to buy this tentatively because again, bare knuckle fighting, not super interested in it. But I will say this does sound like a pretty good fight. Like honestly, I think these two guys are going to beat the crap out of each other. And, you know, I'm interested in Johnny Hendricks. Brandon Ward's interesting too. Kind of crazy in the cage. So I'm actually kind of buying this. This was a weird fight that kind of made sense in the bare knuckle boxing world. So I'm buying this, Jason.
Yeah, I don't think I'll watch it. I just, you know, quite honestly, I don't know. I mean, I want to say, like, when I've seen, like, these internet pay-per-views for bare knuckle boxing, it'd been like $30. I don't see myself forking over $30 to watch bare knuckle boxing. I think the question ultimately with bare knuckle boxing is how much of this is still a thing in the United States 12 months from now. You know, I guess if you're Bellator and you look at Brandon Ward, who, you know, announces retirement and then clearly, obviously not retired, makes you kind of wonder what the people at Bellator kind of think about this in terms of Brandon Ward. Maybe they don't care. Who knows? But, it also, I mean, it's weird about Johnny Hendricks, the fact of, you know, guy was a free agent and, apparently, you know, just didn't get an offer. So to me, I'm selling this. I highly doubt I'll watch this. And just because bare knuckle boxing just, you know, I don't know. It's just not my cup of tea.
Yeah, I can certainly understand that. When there's so much MMA every single week, there isn't a whole lot of room for another combat sport to take our attention.
Yeah, and to me, bare knuckle boxing, it's such a niche audience, you know, and but I mean, you do see there's a lot of fighters who are very interested in bare knuckle boxing, and I I think the problem that bare knuckle boxing is going to have is I just don't think there's going to be a television network that wants to take a chance. I mean, would a DAZN take a chance on bare knuckle boxing?
I think DAZN would. I think a television network probably wouldn't. I think it's hard to sell advertisers, but when you're a subscription service, I think stuff like that is somewhat interesting. And that's probably the one way I'll go and watch the Ward Hendricks fight. Like you, I probably wouldn't spend $30, but if it was on a subscription that I was already subscribed to, that's definitely something I would tune into. So honestly, if you're talking about maybe the survival of the sport, I think it is through hopping on one of these on-demand services.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw, by the way, speaking of DAZN, they actually signed a deal with Combates America for their English broadcast in the United States and Canada. That's what the press release said. Did have a Canadian follower of mine say that he tried to watch last Friday night when Combates was supposed to be on. It was not on, so we'll see you there. But, you know, DAZN, obviously, they're adding some product. But as I said, the next 2 weeks for DAZN are going to be very critical for them entering the United States market. These stream qualities, and that's one of the things that a Canadian follower of mine had said to me. He said the stream quality for him has not been very good. And you know, if you're asking people to pay $10 a month, you better be giving them a high definition stream. That thing better not buffer. And I'm sure if you're Bellator, man, you're sitting there going, God, man, hopefully everything works out well for them, because boy, could you imagine if there are streaming issues next Saturday night? Oh my, that would be an awful start for Bellator.
Oh, dude, that's like the ultimate stress test. And there's going to be so many eyeballs on the product that if there is some type of malfunction, that is something that maybe was accessible in the, something that was acceptable in the year 2008, in the year 2018, when so many different streaming services work without a hitch. If you are charging that much and yours does, that's going to be the predominant storyline of the event.
God, I tell you, Dale, I might become a cord cutter. It might happen.
Yeah, well, it's going to happen in your lifetime, you know, as you age, and, you know, probably three quarters of the way there, Jason.
The thing with me more than anything else is I just find myself, and every time I get that DirecTV bill, I'm like, man, I pay a lot of money, and my deal with DirecTV is up like in a month. So we got to see if they give me another good deal. But I sit there and go, man, I just don't watch a lot of TV. I watch, you know, Netflix. I just did a new cell phone plan with AT&T where they gave me this watch AT&T thing, and I get HBO and, you know, a bunch of like the Time Warner stations. Mm-hmm. You know, but I find myself, I just don't watch. I mean, outside of obviously live sporting events, but I mean, it just seems like there's just, a, you know, but you know, I also do wonder, is there going to come a point where these cable satellite companies just kind of realize that, you know, hey, we got to lower our prices to, you know, get people to not cut the cord.
Look, man, I still live with the parents. They have the cord, but, once I move out, you know, I am 100% positive I'm not going to buy cable.
Well, okay. Of all your friends that live on their own, how many of them actually have cable or satellite?
I can't think of a single one that has cable or satellite if it's their choice. Like, I have friends that live on their own, and they just get cable or satellite through the apartments.
Yeah, yeah.
But in terms of their choice, man, everyone just watches Netflix. You know, that's enough for them. Or a smart TV. So I can't think of a single one, and I have plenty of friends who are maybe up there in age, you know, guys in their 30s and 40s who I talk to, you know, working the broadcast and stuff, that are beginning to cut the cord as well, because they're trying to be conservative financially, because it does get expensive, you know. I feel like as more people go away from cable, the prices kind of go up.
Yeah, I know. It's, you know, one of the reasons that I always kind of felt like I would never cut the cord was, oh man, I got to be able to watch, you know, baseball. But I have found myself, I'll be honest with you, I don't know if I have watched 10 hours of MLB baseball this season.
Same here. I was a huge Rangers fan. I still look at the box scores, but it just feels like an inconvenience to sit down and watch baseball, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, I mean, I'll go to a game. You know, but yeah. But if you're looking to go to game, you definitely gotta hit up our friends over at Vivid Seats. All you gotta do is use that promo code Influence on your first order with Vivid Seats. You'll get 10% off your first purchase. All you got to do is go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. And, of course, enter that promo code INFLUENCE, INFLUENCE, to receive 10% off your first purchase with Vivid Seats. I used them. It's a great service. And, of course, we want to get you some deals out there. So be sure to check out our friends over at Vivid Seats. So that's going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report Podcast. Of course, coming up next week, we'll get you ready for Bellator 206. Scheduled to be joined by Douglas Lima and Aaron Pico. So until then, this has been the MMA Report Podcast, which comes out every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
This is the Landry Football with Chris Landry. Quick fix on Radio Influence.
As you get deeper into the season, and we're 3 weeks into the college season, only 2 weeks into the NFL season, you start to get a little bit of a feel for teams. And I'm going to first go to the college game where it's really more evident. You start to get a true feel for what teams are and maybe what they're not. But you know what's really funny, really amazing, is how the impact of the off-season talks affect the narrative of fans and how everybody goes from one extreme to the other. This team's going to be awful. They're going to be 7-5. There's no way they're... And then now you win a game that you maybe don't expect them to, and everybody thinks, hey, they might be a contender for the national playoffs. Folks, if you think that way, if you're that back and forth, you're not doing your homework. You really don't know what you're looking at. So I love trying to get down and deep into this and tell you what truly goes on. Because as we always say, the results are just that. They're the results. They're the results of a lot of things. But people don't know how to interpret the results. You won, that's great. You lost, that's bad. But the world is coming to an end if you lose. Your coach can't coach. The program's in shambles. If you win, hey, this guy's the greatest guy ever. And then in 3 weeks, you're going to flip and have the reverse opinion than you did before. It's really comical, and I don't know. I guess I'm constantly surprised on this end of it, growing up in the coaching profession, in the scouting profession. We certainly do a lot more work, and there's a level of, you know, being thorough that doesn't exist with fans. And that's okay. You're not supposed to be thorough. You're a fan. You've got family. You've got work. Football's an enjoyment. But I'm amazed, and I say this with all love, that there's that much ignorance of football and how it works.
Chris Landry brings you Landry Football every week on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.